We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Welcome to Baldly Go, the officially unofficial podcast for all the Star Trek that we care to watch. This is Jim.
This is Aaron.
And we are here to discuss the first episode of Season 2 of Strange New Worlds, titled The Broken Circle. Aaron, how'd you feel about this episode?
It's funny because I feel like a lot of people coming from our Picard coverage are going to be somewhat shocked by some of my takes because, you know, I'm usually kind of critical about evil Federation takes and, you know, stealing starships and character swings that are kind of weird and unexpected. But I feel like because of the format and the time period in which this show takes place, they neatly dodge all of those. Like, it's okay, actually, for Spock to be kind of emotional and have tears in his eyes as he's saving Nurse Chapel, because this is a younger, less self-assured, less in control of his Vulcan human emotions. And as the doctor pointed out, there's a story reason for it too. He lowered those inhibitions to tap into his anger to defeat the Gorn, and now we're dealing with that emotional fallout this season. The Federation is not quite the it's headed there. It's not quite the utopia that we get to in the Next Generation era. So, like, a lot of the stuff that, like, I kind of, like, go to war on against the Next Generation era, it's not gonna happen in this era. So, having said that, I thought this was a really strong start, especially since we essentially sidelined Captain Pike, the star of the show, and flip the keys over to Dr. Mbinga and Nurse Chapel and Mr. Spock, and they carry it no problem. A little kind of like, Spock's sex life. Oh my God, can we get away from Spock's sex life? But that's
definitely
the only real criticism, and I'm kind of hot for the Gorn invasion. This seems like a hell of a season long arc if that's what they choose to do with it. What about you, Jim?
I ended up liking it quite a bit, with a couple small caveats, but nothing that ruined the episode for me. This, like you said, is a different time in Star Trek, and I keep having to remind myself of that every time they do something that's a little, I guess, out of
Wild
my next
West-y.
Generation wheelhouse. Yeah, totally Wild West. This is the Federation that will let James T. Kirk captain a starship, right? I don't know if that flies in the 24th century Federation, but...
They have an old boys network at the Federation in this era, I think.
Scotch-sipping, cigar-chomping version of the Federation.
Orion slave girl fucking. Yeah, it's a wild, wild era of Star Trek.
Completely. And I feel like that makes it, some of these things more forgivable, but also a little more fun at times. I mean, I always, don't get me wrong, I love The Next Generation. Huge fan. It's my favorite of the Star Treks. But I also kind of like getting out of that sort of confined envelope every once in a while. Going back to this era feels pretty good. I'm looking at it at the beginning of the episode, was a little disappointed that Pike wasn't going to be around. By the end of the episode, I noticed, hey, they never got back to that lawyer thing or whatever they were doing at the beginning. That's strange. And I don't know, because I'm not like super crazy interested in that part of it. So it was kind of nice that it wasn't in this episode, but I know that means later that it's going to be like a full episode of that. And I don't know that I'm going to enjoy that episode very much, depending on what they do with it.
How long are they going to keep the first officer locked up in jail because of racial purity violations or whatever? That's another thing about this Federation.
Tampering.
They're a little bit more reactionary than maybe other eras. I don't know. Because long term, you know, we know that the this number one gets sidelined in favor for Spock.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like it's a little early in the show to be doing that. So yeah, I anticipate there's going to be some kind of measure of a man style like they're going to get like a Boston Legal.
Could be, yeah. Defend her sentience, sure.
Yeah, it's the A plot of a 45-minute episode that'll. Yeah, I don't know. And I'm with you. I'm not super interested in that. And there's like one or two other things I'll file under cringe. But Star Trek has got a pretty big. If you look at their C file, it's pretty big. There's historically Star Trek is engaged in quite a bit. Even when I was a 13-year-old watching, I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is kind of. I'm. This is why this is kind of a dirty secret I keep from my friends at school that I watch this show. This is some cringe shit.
Yeah, I mean, there's penis-shaped rocks that Spock is holding as he's running around a cave. Sure. Some ridiculous shit happened.
I was thinking more of his catchphrase. The modern era. Okay, you leaned into that at the end of Picard, and I'm like, okay, I'll allow it. Lean back out. You've already leaned way too. I gave you an inch, and you leaned a mile. It's time to unlean away from the every captain having their goddamn catchphrase, because it's two episodes into it. We've hit bedrock cringe. We can't do it no more.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I really wanted to hear what Seven of Nine's phrase was, but they don't give it to us. Here we have to hear this one.
It's not. I mean, maybe the writer's strike will give them the time to lean out, but like I think it's already too late to keep us from understanding what 709's catchphrase is going to be. Hopefully, it'll be something better. God, oh my God, Spock is just.
I would like the ship to go now.
Yeah, and just yeah. But overall, really like it.
Yeah, fine. Here's the other cringe thing in this episode. I am not a fan of Carol Kane. But the weird thing about that is the same thing they did with Pike this episode. It happens at the very beginning, and then they just fucking drop her. She's the ship's chief engineer. They're getting into space battles. They just drop her. Why? And then she comes back at the very end.
You know, the thing that I know her the most from is her duet with Billy Crystal in A Princess Bride. She's Miracle Max's wife, the Woods Witch.
Yeah.
She, like Mr. Crystal himself, is a strong flavor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she's playing a capital C character. So it... I mean, but you know what? Scotty is a character... we've had engineers that are characters before in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to withhold judgment because I kind of like her.
Billy Crystal. Each their own. Look, I'm over here drinking coffee. I know you're not a fan, but I like coffee.
It's a strong flavor.
Yeah. It's just not my flavor. Like it would feel weird if Pee-wee Herman were on the bridge of a Star Trek ship. Carol Kane's one of those characters, like you said, that just feels weird.
I feel like we're on the verge of being the Muppet. What do they call that? Waldorf and Statler. We're like, hey, this episode is pretty good. Kind of liked it, except for that one cringe part. Yeah, I hate the engineer. Oh, what about Spock's a boo? Yeah, where we've turned into a hater cast within 5 minutes. Should we get to the recap itself, or
probably should? I mean, there's tons of good stuff in here, so yeah. Let's do it.
Up front, since this is a new, this is a retrofitted feed. This is a Picard class podcast feed, A 1701A. The refit includes a new email address, StarTrek@baldmove.com. That should handle us going forward for our Star Trek needs. StarTrek@baldmove.com. If you got opinions on anything we have to say, we will get around to answering it in the fullness of time.
Absolutely.
Set phasers to add. We'll be right back.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy. And strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our four-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Captain on Bridge, welcome back to Baldy Go.
All right, let's start with the recap. Enterprise is getting a tune-up at Starbase 1 while the crew takes some leave, and we see that there's some tension at Starfleet, but we don't know what it's about yet.
Starbase 1 orbiting Jupiter. I guess that I just saw Starbase 1 nigh destroyed in orbit of the Earth, the third planet, third rock from the sun. I did not know that the Starbase could just kind of wander like that. Or maybe there was a Starbase 1 in Jupiter and it got blown up and they rebuilt it around.
Mm-hmm. They're like, that was kind of a commute. Can we just rebuild it here?
Yeah. Why do we have Starbase 1 parked several astronomical units away from the seat of the Federation of Power? I'm not sure. It looks great, though. I love the kind of like old school Starbase envisioning where it has these big, like, I don't know what you call those, biome pods. There's like an Everest biome and a tropical jungle biome. And I also love the way, this is one of my favorite things about the show, the way this show looks retro future. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about this in the preview podcast, that this is kind of like Popular Mechanics conception of the future from the 60s, which is what Star Trek was. And I really love the shuttlecraft. They've got the kind of like angular old Galileo style looking, but it's also like with the full budget of a 2023 science fiction show. It's perfect. It's perfect.
And you got all these crazy like drones flying around too, these repair drones and whatever.
I really like how busy the starport looks. In a way that, like, you know, I remember Lucas did the special editions and that Tatooine, they had the spaceport and it was always kind of barren and desert and it's, you know, supposed to be this bustling thing. And they didn't have the budget for it. And then they just filled it up in the special editions and it looked kind of busy for the sake of busy. For some reason, the Starbase doesn't look like that. Like, I believe that there's probably traffic flying in and out. Any kind of, like, if you've seen them fitting a ship that's about to go off on a voyage and there's cranes going everywhere and boxes delivering and boats coming in and out and fuel bunkers. And it's like it felt like a 22nd century version of that, mm-hmm. 23rd century version of that. And I thought that was really cool. And it didn't look like it's like, yeah, this is probably what it's supposed to look like. It didn't look like an empty thing that it was only empty because of is a budget is a bustling base of activity.
Yeah, I like the use of all the drones. The one thing I don't understand is why you would fly shuttles into that cacophony. You have transporters, right? Why are you flying a shuttle to try and dock with the Enterprise when there's so much shit going on?
That is a good question. I don't know. Because, like, well, I'm guessing that, like, did they come from Earth? Like Pike and, you know, he's talking about talking with the top brass and all that. Did he just come from Earth, like at Starfleet Command? Or is there a detachment of Starfleet Command here in the Starbase? That would make sense, but you're right.
But they buzz the tower of the Enterprise there, right? They're like within a few hundred yards of it, maybe, which seems way too close with all that
self-driving
activity.
Shuttlecraft. They're just really safe. They just, it's a ballet.
I suppose, I mean, the drones have to be self-guided. So, yeah, why not?
Have to.
Anyway, yeah, we find out that Commander Pelia is going to be running the inspections and upgrades and stuff. Pike's looking for loopholes to keep Una free and in Starfleet. She doesn't want his help, but he's pretty insistent. He says he's going to go take a 3-day leave to go talk to, I guess, a lawyer who doesn't want to take their case. Am I supposed to know who this person is, or are they just teasing for later?
I thought maybe this is the relationship with the Starfleet officer to Pike had that, you know, kind of got interrupted last season when she arrested his first officer.
I don't think so.
I rewound and watched it a couple more times. Yeah. I think this is like space Johnny Cochran.
Yep.
It's like totally. like a very talented lawyer, and they're trying to get him, but she's got an unwinnable case, so. Mm-hmm. It's tough.
If the
going jeans
fit, you must acquit.
If the jeans are not spliced, you have to be nice. I don't know. I don't. But I surmise that it must be a new character that we're going to get introduced to pretty quick.
Yeah. We also find out that they still have no chief engineer or head of security because Lon has fucked off after the Gorn episode to go find Oriana's family. And Spock's going to take command while Pike is gone for those 3 days. Something tells me it's not going to be 3 days. It's going to be a lot longer than that.
See, I took that as them explaining that we'll probably get to this in the next episode.
Uh-huh. I think so, but I think some bad things are going to happen, I'm sure. You can't just have it be uneventful or an episode where he goes and, like, the whole episode is him trying to convince a lawyer to take a case.
I think that's an A-plot. Then you got a B and C plot. The B, there'll be some kind of sexcapade with Spock. T'Pring's going to come back, and he's going to, you know, still want to maintain a bedside vigil over Nurse Chapel, and he's going to be doing a lot of pulling on his collar and Vulcan flop sweating. And then the C plot will be Mbinga going back, stealing a shuttlecraft to go visit his star child. Yeah, okay. That sounds like a 45-minute episode of Star Trek. I can rock with that.
They're going to steal a ship in every episode.
This is going to be the ship stealing season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was watching an interview with the 17 executive producers that make the show, and apparently it's going to be ship stealing season. Piracy, full on piracy.
Yeah, but they do completely drop this plot at this point. So Spock gets checked up on by the doctor, who diagnoses him with stress and prescribes a Vulcan lute to treat it. Nurse Chapel comes in, the doctor notices Spock's response, and Chapel then says, I'm going to go apply for a fellowship in archaeological medicine, which I assume she's still going to do after the events of this episode. I don't know what archaeological medicine is. That's interesting.
I was wondering the exact same thing.
Is this... like penicillin? Are they gonna like look at what they were doing in the 19th, 20th century and be like,
have they lost their recipe for penicillin the way we lost our recipe for Roman concrete? It's like, it's something with mold and bread, but there's a million different breads and there's a million different molds. Yeah, I could see that.
Try a bite of each, see what happens.
I don't know, maybe it's like a anthropology kind of thing, like you go and study uncontacted planetary tribes and see what kind of, like, you know, like they're taking herbs and stuff. Can we run these through a tricorder and isolate the polymer strands that make your white blood cells feel good? I don't know. I cocked my Vulcan eyebrow at archaeological medicine too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hope they get an episode with that in it, because that I am interested in.
So, like, but the overall meaning, it feels to me like Nurse Chapel's trying to get off the ship, but also something that maintains a closeness to Spock. So it's like, to me, this was coded of like, she knows she's trying to get out of a situation that's kind of sticky, but also she is down with the copper-blooded Vulcan, and this is how they signal that to us.
Yeah. We'll see where that goes. The maintenance team is doing some updates, and it's kind of annoying the Enterprise crew on the bridge. Uhura, primarily, because she's constantly getting messages, apparently.
We found also Ensign Ortega is one of history's greatest monsters. She's one of those gamers that flips her Y-axis upside down. Like,
inverted
what the fuck?
Controls. Yep.
What the fuck? Jesus.
I don't know.
What are you going to do?
Makes her better.
Do you think that that will pay off later in the season when some other ensign has to take over her console and suddenly they try to take the ship up and it crashes into the planet because, oh, Jesus, who the fuck flipped the axis here? This is non-standard.
It
this
won't
is
be anything that
dangerous.
Catastrophic, but yeah, I totally see that coming.
This isn't all Elkar's neither. She fucking wired a physical switch or joystick or something. It's going to be hard to change. But apparently she's the only ensign. She flies the ship 24 hours a day and needs no sleep.
I guess she's got a deal with the other ones.
She got a side stick. She hardwired a stick to the side of the console. It's the Ortega stick.
All right. Yeah. It's like when Riker takes the Enterprise D into manual control.
Yes, and it just pops up a Logitech Thrustmaster up for him. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Nice.
Did you notice who was fussing with Uhura over shutting down her comms panel?
No.
It's Drummer's husband. One of her many husbands from The Expanse. He's in everything. He was just in Yellow Jacket. Samer Salem is his name. And he's just in all the science fiction stuff now.
Yeah, I never notice him, but apparently he's in everything, so good for him.
Yeah.
Speaking of Uhura, she gets a distress signal from Laan and tells Spock about it, and Spock goes to Starfleet to ask permission to go after her, and they say, absolutely not, because some complicated thing where the planet she's on is actually in the custody of the Klingons as part of the treaty. They swap it every 30 days between the Klingons and the Federation.
Because it's a dilithium mining planet. Now, if you know anything about starships, you know dilithium is the thing that allows warp drive to work. It allows you to pass matter and antimatter together and annihilate them in a controlled, and it tunes this plasma stream to get pure power out of it. So it's like, it's essentially the petroleum of our day.
That makes sense.
I did laugh at the idea of, like, in the early 80s, the United States and the USSR jointly sharing a petroleum plant in the Middle East where they flip control every 30 days.
Can you imagine, day 30 of that would just be sabotage and shitting in the upper deck of the toilets and they'd be doing so much garbage there that
stealing
half of
all the Q and the apostrophe keys so the Klingons can't send email because
inverting all the controls
every proper noun, every Klingon proper noun is a Q and an apostrophe somewhere in it. So they're fucked, totally fucked.
Yeah, that wouldn't work. There's no situation under which that would work except for a television show where it's written to work.
Yeah, but it's an interesting concept, and it does drive a lot of the action. Before we move on to the other interesting stuff, I want to take a couple. I want to take a moment to talk about. We talked about how good the show looks in terms of Starbase, but this bridge, I just think every time I see it in like a full screen, they always have this kind of some kind of crazy rotating Dutch angle as you go through it. But it's like such a great blending of like literally the layout of the old series with like modern materials and camera techniques, a little bit of J.J. Abrams style lens flaring, and it just looks like $1 million. And I also really like the fact that they give Spock his Vulcan lute, which we saw him play in the old series. Like anytime there was like a Spock episode, it would like open on him in his quarters playing his lute, and it's like backfitting this to be like a stress relieving thing that he does to manage his human emotion. I just thought that was cool. It's
part
a nice
of
way
his
to
meditation.
Yeah, it's a nice way to take those nuggets from the past things and not even explain them, but just give them another dimension, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I do too. I will also say on the ship, I'm really starting to come around on the design of this particular Enterprise. I was not a fan of those tapered nacelles for a long time.
Yeah.
I think it's growing on me for sure.
I always thought it was pretty slick. I thought it was a great way to be respectful of the old Constitution class and not have it look like a 60-year-old prop, you know?
Mm-hmm. For sure. So Spock takes this information to his crew, and they decide to steal the Enterprise and go after Lon. And then Ensign, I don't know what she is. Jenna Mitchell is her name. I don't think we saw her much at all in the first season. Maybe here and there, as like a navigator or something. Anyway, she creates coolant leak in engineering to get everyone to evacuate the ship so they can steal it. It works on everyone except for Commander Pelia, who sees right through this ruse. She asks Spock if he has a good reason to steal the Enterprise, which is obviously what he's trying to do. And he's kind of flustered, but she wants to steal the Enterprise too, and decides to help him create a more convincing fake leak. As long as she can be chief engineer, which never comes back in this episode. Super weird. I expected her to have to do something.
I mean, you got to have a chief engineer, I guess. So, and I think that it's more of like, let me stay and do this heist with you, or I'm going to tell on you and this whole thing will stop.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Did you hear what they called her?
Lanthanide? Is the name of her species?
Lanthanide. Which is a reference to the rare earth mineral class, the lanthanides on the periodic table. And I thought it was cool because, like, we don't know very much about this. I've never heard of this species before. It doesn't have a memory alpha entry, which means this is a creation for the show. But apparently this is a near humanoid species that was on Earth and lived among us, and they did not reveal themselves as an alien species until the 22nd century. I thought it's interesting that the term lanthanide is that these elements, these rare earth elements, were named even though, because like it's a common misconception that rare earth elements are rare, they're actually abundant, but that for the longest time they would quote unquote hide behind other minerals because of the way they're bound, so they would stay hidden. And lanthanide actually is from the Greek root prefix that means to lie hidden. So I thought it was kind of neat that they're like, you know, we don't know much about the species, but that's a really cool hook that there are aliens living among us and they are yet to reveal themselves. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I'm curious. They mentioned, you know, that they remained undetected until the 22nd century. I want to know how long that was. Like, when did they show up? Were they always here? Are they the indigenous species, humanoid species of Earth? Are they aliens that came to Earth? Did they build the pyramids, or did they start TikTok? Like, I want to know how long they've been here, right?
Exactly. Are we talking Leif Erikson? Are we talking Cleopatra? Yeah. Are we talking Ramses? Yeah, exactly.
But we might actually find out more.
They showed up in the summer of, 2219. And then they revealed themselves at 2222.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. they just came for a really cool concert, stayed for the sex and drugs, and outed themselves 3 years later.
Nice. So, yeah, we go over to Lon, who actually, well, you know, there's a shot that I wanted to talk about real quick.
Also, you're just going to skip over Spock's, you know, I guess we already covered the cringe.
Oh yeah, I figured we didn't need to talk about it again, but
all right,
if
yeah,
you'd like to,
right.
how about the last captain, Zoom? Can you imagine somebody saying Zoom to give an order?
Yeah.
Vamos, not terrible.
Or
but
take
Zoom?
It. Or take it. Vamos is because that's just let's go. You know, that's that's pretty cool. Zoom is pretty god awful.
Not as bad as Spock's though.
Yeah, and it's just like the whole buildup. Like it, this is a thing. We all know it's a thing. We all know. Picard had a whole bunch of cool catchphrases and tugging on his jacket and all that kind of stuff, and. I don't even know that like this has been a big thing that all captains have done historically throughout Star Trek. You know, like
I'm trying to think if Janeway had one. I don't remember.
I mean, Kirk would bring a flash out something for a movie where he'd be like, you know, second star to the left and straight on to, you know, do a Peter Pan quote or something to inspire wonder and awe and kind of like leave us in a nice spot at the end of a movie. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to kind of like take note of that and make it a little big of an event for like the community and for us as fans to talk about. When the show does it, it's
Yeah, it was always implicit. It was always like a wink and a nod to the audience. Like, we know what we're doing here. This captain has a catchphrase. Now it's explicit. Like, it's in the world. And I'm...
Like
yeah, I don't know how I feel.
We got
about
Picard
that
at Starfleet Academy sitting on his bunk with his friend that's going to get stabbed by a Nausicaan in a couple years. He's like, what are you going to say, Picard? He's like, I don't know. I'm thinking, make it go. Make it go. That's going to be my thing. Make it go. And then he just kept on workshopping and make, like, that's just dumb. It's kind of dumb that this is like an expectation that every captain's going to dream of the snappy thing that they say before an engine ships engage.
His first draft was 6 verses from a Shakespeare play, and that's
exactly
too much.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're like, you can't. That's like, you know, that's how we actually lost to that first Ferengi. And he had to get it at the Picard maneuver out because he was so their ass was so kicked in from him spending 3 minutes doing a one man Shakespeare show. I want the ship to go now.
Yeah, I'd like the ship to go now. I will say, once the ship actually goes, it's super cool. I don't know that I've seen this angle on a warp shot before, where they show it from the front of the ship looking back across it. And you see the background sort of like blur and disappear behind them. I thought that was super cool.
They do a lot of really cool things with the camera for a space show where they kind of like keep it spacey, keep things unfettered that I enjoy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of rotating cameras and whirling cameras and things.
It's very reminiscent to late season Expanse work, honestly, where they just for no good reason have someone get off an elevator on the roof. And, you know, you'd just be walking and suddenly people would be on the ceiling. Oh, right, it's a star base. What the fuck? No one cares.
All right, you want to talk about what Lon's up to?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. She's winning a drinking contest with a Klingon, which is pretty impressive. What species is she?
Well, she is the descendant of Khan. Like she's like the great 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 granddaughter of Noon, so she's got that super soldier gene. But like we talked about this in the I thought that was cool to have a security officer with like super soldier genes in there. Like I thought that'd be neat, but it never. I always got the opinion that like the blood had so thinned out that there wasn't much there. But maybe she still got his blood wine drinking super
seems
gene.
Like it. Yeah,
because like Marion Ravenwooding some fucking Sherpa up in the Himalayas is okay.
I buy it.
So it's okay. Yeah.
If you told me that I couldn't outdrink any random bartender, I would say yes, you're right.
Yeah. But a Klingon. I don't know. She's a little. She's a little bitty thing too. Like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time I see a character, like, beat a Klingon in a blood wine drinking contest or something like, I always think, oh, my God, what is wrong with you? You must have crippling alcoholism. You're tall. For you to be with this body shape and this body size and you're out drinking a Klingon 3 times, you must have carrying your liver around in a bucket. Like, who hurt you?
Yeah.
Or
that Klingon has never had a drink. It's the first time drinking blood wine.
Yeah, this is he went on like a spring break. This is a Klingon who's on Klingon rum springa. He's teetotal blood wine. First he's like, ah, look at this little Earth girl. I'm a drinker, and then suddenly he's on his back seeing stars. Yeah, that's the only explanation.
But she does win that contest, and as a reward, she wants to meet Granax. I don't know.
I wrote it down. Granax. What the.
Granax? No guarantees he'll meet with her, and I don't think, in fact, he does by the end of this episode, and I don't see any reason to stay on this planet, so Granax just, like, background character that we don't
No, Granax, they do talk to him.
Like was he the guy who wanted to buy the weapons?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought
that's the old Granax.
Yeah. All right. Well,
that's
then
the thing. He had an axe made out of grain. He needed new weapons. He was desperate to get his hands on because
those fall apart immediately. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You ever try to cut something with a cornflake? It just doesn't work.
The Enterprise crew shows up and asks her, "What's going on? We got your message." She tells them that a faction on the planet is trying to get the Federation and the Klingons back into the war. so they can jack up the prices of their dilithium, because this is a dilithium mine. And apparently Oriana's parents are sick, so the doctors are going to go help her, and Spock and Uhura are going to help Lon investigate this faction. Let me ask you this. What do you think of the show's Klingons? Because they've done several riffs on Klingons lately. Discovery had a very different riff. This looks like a halfway point, sort of, between the TNG era Klingon and that Klingon. Are you feeling this Klingon?
Yeah, they're all right. They're all right.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that they're not, like, reptile people. They definitely are experimenting with...
Or just people with weird facial hair.
Yeah, yeah. They're definitely, they're just not wearing bronzer with the highly defined eyebrows and mustaches. I don't know. It is weird because they definitely seem to be experimenting with like more recognizably Earth ethnic hairstyles, which I don't know how do you feel about alien species from Star Trek being heavily identified with like Earth genetic racial markings? Because like,
so I liked when I like when they do
is Worf black? Is Worf black?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
not in the sense you're talking.
And I'm not like, this isn't like, I can't fucking believe they're making black. It's more of like, I just never took like. So they might have. They might have light and dark skin Klingons, and they might have all kinds of racial. They may or may not have prejudices and all kinds of cultural things. But like to say that like a Klingon is black or a Klingon is white or a Klingon is Asian is like a weird thing for this show to go in that direction. And I hope they don't.
Yeah,
I hope they don't.
So I mean, look, Star Trek definitely stereotypes their alien races, right? Just not with the stereotypes that exist here on Earth,
right?
For different
they have
racial
a warrior species or a logical species, or
right?
You know, it's not usually like this is a species defined by, you know, a whole bunch of like complicated interplanetary racial dynamics.
Yeah, this is nothing recognizable as a 21st century allegory, but they reserve that stuff for aliens that are more one-offs, right? The story they want to tell in that episode. And I think that's better. I think that's a better approach, because you can kind of get stuck in the mode where it's like, well, now every time we have these people on screen, we have to tell a story that is relatable to the modern context. And I don't think that's a very good mode to get in on this show. I want them to be able to tell the stories they need to tell with the characters they need to tell it with.
Yeah. It's not something I don't think they can do. It's more of like, it's something that they would have to take care to keep. Because it's already it's always weird for me. Because I always felt like, from the show's perspective, Worf's journey was about becoming more human and more comfortable with his human side. And there's always the implicit, like, humans are kind of the only good species. Everybody, you know, like Vulcans are like, yeah, they're all right, but they're too uptight. And they could learn a lot from hanging out with it. And Klingons just are angry and irrational, and they're governed by it. It's like, like humans was like the ideal. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's certainly a flattering thing to be told from an anthropological standpoint. But in the 21st century, I guess I'm looking for something a little bit more 360 degree. Retrospective about the species.
It's all started from hairstyles, and I will say it always struck me as strange that every Klingon has the same hairstyle. Like, can you imagine if humanity only had one hairstyle?
it would
be so stupid, right? Like,
we probably could
blow somebody's mind by showing them a braid or something. Have you guys never thought to take this stuff that's on your head and do something with it?
Yeah, but like, if you go back far enough in human history, you probably did. You know, because, you know, like, gorillas all have the same fucking hairstyle.
Yeah, but we hadn't invented space travel and warp drives, right?
True.
Like, God, we can engineer a warp drive, but we can't, I don't know, put your hair back?
Yeah, the idea that you would just have one universal... I mean, sometimes, like, they do that. Like, I think I've read that in North Korea, like, everyone's kind of, like, styles themselves after... a particular type of hairstyle, and like when they had the Mao era in China, there was everyone's wearing the pajamas and the kind of the Vulcan cut. And but you're right, a whole planet, like, to me, like, what I'd like to see is empire. Like what, yeah, like in the Klingon, like what, like I would think it'd be cool to have regional differences in Klingons. Like if you're from the mm-hmm. south continent of Quonos or something, then you have this style of dress because it's hotter or it's colder or it's more mountainous, and you know, but like mm-hmm. You
it's,
never
it's
get
something that.
I
don't know. I would say better sci-fi shows do extremely well. I'm thinking of The Expanse here, where The Expanse has all sorts of personal expression and regional things going on, even on individual planets, let alone when you're talking about different factions within the solar system, right? So, like,
yeah,
they do that really well. Star Trek does this all the time, though. Like, look at the Vulcans, look at the Romulans, look at the Klingons. Like, all of them have the exact same hair, the exact same
clothes,
mannerisms, and way of thinking about their culture. Which, if you
land
take
on the planets,
even
all their habs look the same. Yeah,
and if you look at humanity under any level of magnification, you can see that we are entirely different across the spectrum. So, like, it's always weird to see such a homogenous view of a species.
Do you think this is like a rare, like, because, like, I wonder 500 years in the future if, you know, Earth continues to kind of coalesce under, you know, one form of government. And you look at, like, when, like, how influential, like, Greco-Roman architecture was throughout all of Europe. And, like, imagine that only for hundreds of more years, and it goes across all the world. Do you think that we will homogenize eventually? Like, there'll be, but it just, the climates, it's a lot of it's driven by, like, climate. It's not like, oh, we're going to live in adobe over here, and sure, we're going to make bricks over here, and we're going to do, it's like, you kind of build what you need to keep warm and or cool.
Yeah. Definitely driven by that. And it's in a lot of ways driven by personal taste, which I don't think is going to totally homogenize.
See, I don't know that personal taste would be universal. Like, the exactly, idea yeah. that, like, humans adorn their bodies and their clothing and their homes to kind of reflect their own. Like, I don't know that that would be necessarily something that every alien would do. Like, that might be seen as highly idiosyncratic. Like, why would you spend the energy to make yourself stand out? That seems dumb. But, mm-hmm. yeah. I don't know. It'd be cool to explore some of those differences in Star Trek rather than just kind of remixing Earth culture over and over and over again.
Yeah, and all this is to say, you know, maybe do something more interesting with the hair. I'm cool with that for the Klingons. Why not?
Full mohawks.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm talking like the spiky ones where you got to use like wood glue to maintain.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the full like SLC punk.
Exactly. OB from the new Spider-Man.
Yeah. Foot and a half. Uh-huh. Yep. Red alert, here comes an ad break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to Baldly Go. All right, Mbenga and Chapel go and examine Oriana's parents, and they get noticed by some nasty-looking thugs who demand them to follow. They want their medical prowess.
I think it's funny that Hollywood writers very rarely can conceive of the scale of a galactic event. They, like, as Mbenga is like talking about the horrors of the Klingon Federation War, and he mentioned 100 million people died for what, a parsec of space. Do you guys not realize that the death toll in World War One was higher than that?
Right.
Like, and that's just not even, we call it a world war,
essentially.
We're talking about a continent or two. Mm-hmm. Of 20th century, early 20th century destruction, I find it 100 million dead in the Klingon Federation War to be like precious almost. Mm-hmm. It's like when a baby comes up, like a 3-year-old comes up and tells you, how much did you pay for that car? $100? Like, aw, mm-hmm. Aw, buddy, you don't even know. Like, Christ, can we not throw billions of dollars? I feel like every time someone says like a billions or hundreds of billions of writers, like, Jesus Christ, how fucking morbid are you? I'm like, nah, it's a galaxy.
When the Federation has hundreds of planets and dozens of species in it, it's going to have that many people. Trillions of people.
Presumably the Klingon Empire also has hundreds of mm-hmm. planets with species that are in various states of thrall or cooperate. Yeah, there should be, like, anytime there's an intergalactic war, there should be billions dead at the least.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even blink an eye if they said, they threw the T word around, trillions. But it's just always like, oh, a hundred million, that roughly the death toll of 3 or 4 years in the early 20th century. It's funny.
It is. So then, did you want to talk about Oriana? Oriana is the girl that, in the Gorn episode last season, I forget the name of it, was the newt from Aliens.
You also recognize her as, surely, she's Kara the Explora from the last season of The Expanse, too.
Wow. Okay. Sure, why not? Let's bring all the Expanse characters
I know,
over
right?
to Star Trek.
I actually, unironically, like, you know, you've got the great value Kamina Drummer already. Like, get the real. Let's get the real thing,
for sure.
Get, yeah.
But yeah, she's the girl they found there, and then Lon went off and to this planet apparently to try and find her family, and they did. They found her family.
By the way, I would not hate in season 3 for them to just, like, every season they bring a new member from the Expanse cast over. I'd like to see mm-hmm. Wes Chat. I could. Yeah.
I could go with, I can't think of a single person that I wouldn't want to see.
No, they were all so good.
Star Trek. Yeah.
So Lon's team meets with some potential weapons buyers, and I guess his Grainax sells them some Federation phasers. Whatever their plan is happening tomorrow, and they prepare to beam back to the ship, but they find out that we probably ought to stay because Mbenga and Chapel are missing. I don't know.
I thought that's funny that they were aware that they lost contact with their chief medical officer and head nurse and for hours, and no one bothered to tell the acting captain.
Like, yeah, they knew already.
I get it. There's a bunch of trainees and junior officers and they're understaff, but like that's probably something important to tell the captain, you know.
Probably. I don't know. It's hilarious to me. You call them like trainees and understaffed. They're also underage. I don't know who the fuck this child that is manning the transporter controls is, but
they're very young.
Look like they are 12. I'm sure they're 46, but they look like they're 12.
That's authentic, man. Walk around a Navy ship. Like there's 18-year-olds on that thing. Like what the fuck? You know? It can happen.
I guess they got to go through Federation Academy. But dude, can you join that at like Harry Potter age?
Nog certainly joined Starfleet underage.
He was super young.
So yeah, why not?
Yeah, I guess if your parents signed a permission slip. Wesley, mm-hmm. Wesley wasn't. He was like six. Wasn't he 16 when he?
Yeah, he had to be.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What did you think? There's a little clue, and I don't know how much of this is like really important, but I noticed that they're talking about these Klingons speaking obscure dialect. Like, what are they trying to implant? Like, because it to me, this was like, this is a purely economic thing. Like, you got a gang essentially that sees that they have an artificial scarcity thing that they can pump up their profits on, so they're like trying to do war profiteering. But like this Klingon speaking obscure dialect makes me think that there's something kind of like cultural or religious, but maybe it's just them trying to stay under the radar and be obscure, so they're using you know it's like using Navajo code talkers, you know. It's not because the Navajo Nation was secretly puppeting the allies. It's like we were using them to
Yeah, it's possible we'll hear more about this later. You know, the admirals at the end of this are kind of like, oh, thank God Spock went off on his crusade here because he prevented a two-front war, potentially.
There's no way anyone...
Did he permanently prevent it or not?
Well, just like, do you buy that the Klingons or the Romulans or anyone would work with the Gorn? Because the way the Gorn were depicted last, it'd be like someone allying with the Xenomorphs. And I get it. There's Paul Reiser. Always fucking Paul Reiser.
Sure. But, there's a dollar to be made. Yeah. Maybe.
But he wasn't allied. Yeah. He was wanting to like capture and use him as a buy. Well, maybe that's the they're going to just run that back. They're going to try to capture the Gorn and turn him into bioweapons, or they're unleashing the Gorn as like a plot, like sacrifice, like pointing him at the Alpha Quadrant instead of the Beta Quadrant.
They've already done Aliens. I feel like Star Trek has already done Alien 3 with what? Star Trek 5? Is that the one?
Where that's one where they go meet God.
Which one? Yeah, that's 5. They've done Aliens 3. So Alien Resurrection is the one they need to do now.
Mm.
Where, like, I don't know, Mbenga is going to become the mother of a Gorn or something. I'm not sure. He's always been part Gorn. Who knows?
Oh, no. Yeah. There's a lot of hidden secrets and layers to these people on these ships. So we'll see.
We'll see. Mbenga and Chapel are taken to the Dilithium Caves, the mines, where they find a Federation starship being constructed. And they're taken to the Klingons injured so they can treat them. They realize, well, the ship is probably going to be used for a false flag operation to restart the Borg, and they decide to go to the bridge to warn the Enterprise.
Was there any hint that the Doctor was this war traumatized in the last season? I don't, because he was,
I don't
so
think
much
so.
Of his arc was the daughter, right?
Yes.
And I thought that that was going to be his arc for the entire show, you know, kind of that's like, but like they just dispensed with it super easy. And now they seem like now that he doesn't have his kid to worry about. He's got all this 100 million dead. The other one's like this, like this Klingon's like, where did you learn how to treat Klingons from? I was like, I was stationed on the moon of Jagal. Ah, you're a fucking liar. No one made it off. And he just looks, he gets a 1,000-yard stare. And it's like, the air was so full of blood. It rained red. And I'm like, how the hell would that work? Plus, Klingon's blood is purple. So I guess he's talking about human blood.
Well, yeah, it was human and Klingon. It was like
it was a dark maroon.
Yeah.
It rained dark maroon. Mm-hmm. I feel like they could have workshopped that a little bit, because I don't, how does blood get vaporized? And I mean, I just had a lot of questions. I had a lot of questions about the poetic nature of his description. But it seems
maybe
like
they
changed
the color of Klingon blood in this. I don't know. Maybe it's red.
Yeah.
Now.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
They did say something fucked up in this scene where apparently the Klingons have two dermal systems.
Yeah.
He says your dermal system is redundant.
Yeah.
Two layers of skin, not even layers, but two whole skins.
Yeah, apparently so. You just they're like shark. That's what it's like shark teeth.
How does
it
even
you
work?
You rip off a layer of skin. There's a skin right underneath it. You know.
Yeah, but that's all just one layer, one big layer of skin. It's not like this. So it must be a skin, nerve endings, and blood vessels, and more skin underneath it.
Yeah, some kind of separate. Because otherwise, it's just thick skin. Like
right.
How do they differentiate?
It's like rhino hide, but. I don't
know,
man.
That's why their foreheads get all wrinkly. All those layers just go to the top and start piling up and turning in on each other.
I don't know how that works. I don't think they thought that through, but
yeah, it's just something weird. It's, you know, like, Vulcans have copper-based blood, but they're compatible with the human genome enough that you can have children with them. Like, I don't know. It's always been a little science fiction fantasy.
I was super interested in how they had constructed a Federation starship from scratch. And I know they were talking about like, oh, this is a faction made up of Klingons and Federation, officers, I assume. They must have had engineers there who were intimately familiar with the construction of a Federation starship.
Although when you can replicate, you know, I don't think you can replicate a whole starship. There's a whole like page in the Star Trek Next Generation technical manual about the science advisors and the writers kind of having a sidebar about like, can you like, what should the starbase look like? And should it look like a giant replicator? Can you replicate? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, you know, like replicating starships, like that takes so much drama, you know, out of the world. And,
yeah.
And it's one of those things where, you know, you don't want it, the loss of a starship to mean nothing. Right. Mm-hmm. Human crew aside. So like, but even then, like if you can replicate large portions, you know, I imagine it's a lot easier to replicate a warp drive when you can just like, just 3D print it in like six big pieces, you know?
Yeah, it would be. I don't know.
And they got drones,
see any giant replicators.
And things like that.
Do have drones, but they must've had somebody with some engineering knowledge.
Yeah,
some pretty significant engineering knowledge.
And the Klingons are a spacefaring culture. Like, it's not like they don't know how to obviously use the lithium crystals and things like that.
Yeah, but it's all the way down to like the transponder codes, which
true
to me was
that
like
has to be
surprising.
Yeah, that's like that's something that like I bet that that's true. Like that you might have to steal a few key pieces, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would you be able to replicate a transponder if it's that easy? Then shit.
Right. What's the point of a transponder then?
Yeah. Good point.
But yeah, they probably stole that. Anyway, the Mbenga decides, you know what? We can get to the bridge if we hulk out on this green. And he offers up a vial to Chapel, and they both hulk out and they torture a bunch of Klingons until they tell them about the ship's defenses. Apparently there are 30 troops on the bridge. And a transponder on deck 13. So that's where they're going to head.
Yeah, this is just an excuse for big old stunt sequence, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is a Star Trek hallmark, a modern Star Trek hallmark. You got to have the action scenes. If you don't, it's not going to play with certain crowd, I guess.
Well, but Star Trek's always had action scenes. Maybe TNG was probably the least actiony of all the Star Treks, but like the old series, and I know that Deep Space Nine, you know, Sisko wasn't above doing the trademark Federation hammer fist. It's just they have a bigger budget. Like, I really like when they duck down in Jeffrey's tube, they do the 180 camera to kind of show the gravity flipping. And but I, do they think through some of the things that, like, the modern Star Trek, do they think through of the implications that there is a drug that Federation personnel can take that makes them more than a match for Klingons? Because why in the fuck, all the times Klingons have invaded Deep Space Nine in Moss, why wasn't Sisko going to Bashir and being like, all right, Julian, you know the deal. I need 300 vials of this green shit because we got to hand some Klingon their asses again. Is it some kind of treaty they signed that they just won't do it no more?
This is part of the archaeological medicine. This is just fentanyl. I don't know. This is PCP.
Yes, it's angel dust that they're just going. But it's, and also, like, what are the draw? Because also, it seems like something with no drawbacks. Like,
yeah, they don't crash like Julie Mal in The Expanse after she uses her thing, right?
Yeah, no, there's no, like, they don't, like, I thought, like, when they started doing it, and they're showing, like, you know, like, Nurse Chapel weighs like a buck 05, and she's like slamming these Klingon warriors. I'm like, oh, they're gonna, like, they're like breaking bones, and like they're gonna be like actually fucked up at the end. Because that was I used to read Larry Niven. You know, he had the In Space works, and there was the Man Kazin Wars. Kazinthi are these big bipedal lion tiger, like Kazinthi from Wing Commander type deals, and they had these human commandos that through drug conditioning and mental conditioning could channel like all of their body's power into like a single chop or a kick or a blow that could capable of killing a Kazinthi warrior, but it would like shatter their body or sometimes even kill them, the effort to do this, something like that. But like, this is just like, yeah, take a hypro spray and you're just super powered for 5 minutes. There should be a draw. I feel like there should be drawbacks to explain why just they don't do that all the time. And there just weren't.
Before we move on, I have to correct myself. It's Claire. It's Claire who has that ability, not Julie, because otherwise, gonna get emails.
Yes.
I know it.
Yes, you're right.
But yeah, I feel there like should be some consequence, because why not just be on that all the time? Why not just get a drip, a Jim Hadar style drip?
Yeah,
and
fuck
just
coffee.
Be on it.
Yeah, yeah. I've moved on from coffee to Ketracel White. Yeah, it really gets you up marching out of your bed in the morning.
I
thought like they should like these, they should be all fucked up, and they were like they got blown out into space and they got super injured there. But man, it's a curious choice. It's a curious choice to have this super drug that seems like it's super easy to take, no side effects whatsoever. It just works.
Yeah, I'm curious if that'll be something that they lean more into, or if they explain it a little bit more later. We'll see. So Mbenga realizes that the ship is warming up the engines as they code this transponder to send a message to the Enterprise. Their beast mode is running out, so they fight their way to an airlock to escape, but the ship is taking off. So they're too late.
Are they? I also say this, speaking of leaning out of things, they need to lean out of recoding transponders to do things, because I think it's been 3 out of the last 4 seasons of Star Trek I've seen huge plot points revolve all around communicating through transponders. Like, okay, no more. You got to think of some new technobabble, guys. You can't recode transponders anymore.
Oh God. What? I mean, if you take away everything that Star Trek has overused, they have nothing left. I mean, the deflector dish can't be used, couldn't have been used.
That's
in episode 4 of The Next Generation, because they had used it too much by then. Right.
This is like, I feel like halfway through Voyager, it's like someone should have come for it. Like, we can't reverse polarity anymore, guys. We've reversed polarity 17 times. We got to do something else. We got to flip a benzene ring or something. I don't know. We got to introduce a chiral form. We got to do something. But
I mean,
no
the Borg figure that out, right? Like, oh, you're gonna phase your I forget the term for it, where they change the frequency of their phasers or whatever.
Rotate phaser frequency. Rotate phaser and shield frequencies.
Yes. Oh, no, they've that? All right, we'll adapt.
Right.
Fine,
they've adapted.
Work anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. You're right. They just need to. They come up with some. There's so much stupid engineering technological speak that no one understands. They're inventing new stuff all the time. No more transponder codes.
Okay. It hadn't been bothering me, but I'll look forward now. Here's the thing. I really like this last scene with Mbenga as they're fighting their way to the airlock, and Chapel is kind of grabbed by a couple of Klingons, and he's staring down four or five more of them. And her juice has worn off. I'm pretty sure his juice has worn off too. I think he's just fighting out of pure hatred and anger. I think, yeah, this is just pure
that slow here. That slow-mo body slam was just all Mbenga.
Uh-huh. I think so, man.
Yeah, you might be right. Maybe the last vestiges of the juice and yeah, getting the fight or flight jacked up, sure.
Yeah. And honestly, it's not that hard to beat a Klingon. You've seen it time and time again. I mean, Sisko and Odo are fighting Klingons every other episode, even when Odo's a human.
Yeah, 65-year-old British French man can do it. Like, it's, come on. Mbenga looks like he's in prime health, reasonably sturdy. Yeah. Just lace your hands together, make that hammer fist, hit him right between his shoulder blades, boom, crumples him like a cardboard box.
Body slam was pretty cool. I do hope a body slam becomes a thing in Star Trek more. The Mbenga slam. That's what I want to see.
Mm-hmm. Not body slam, Mbenga slam.
Mm-hmm. All right. A Klingon battlecruiser warps in to the system, to this planet. Doesn't see the Enterprise hiding among the space junk. And Lon calls to them, saying there's no sign of Mbenga or Chapel. But she gets a sign when the Federation ship breaks through the surface of the planet. That's a pretty big sign.
That was a really cool shot of her in the foreground and this thing just rising from the Earth and taking off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Spock gets this encoded transponder signal and he immediately puts it all together. He just like infers the reality of the situation, which I was not bothered by. This is Spock. I think Spock can do that.
Those Vulcans, they're very smart, and they know their way around logic. So I hear.
Yes. Yeah. They're obsessed with it.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense to me. He realizes a false flag operation, and then he doesn't want to shoot the ship down because he realizes they also probably are on the ship if they coded the transponder. So he doesn't want to kill Mbenga and Chapel, mostly Chapel.
But what Mbenga is he waiting for?
Necessary collateral damage.
What is he? Because like I get all that. What is he waiting for? Just for him to be emotionally prepared to kill Chapel?
Maybe it might be that, or it might be to give them time to figure something out. Give them every moment they have to get off the ship.
I did think it was a bit of a leap to think that they were still on it.
It is, but they coded the transponder, right?
Yeah, well, so that implies that they were on the ship, they lost contact with them, so they don't know where they are. So I guess it is kind of a reasonable inference.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. I kind of liked it. With these next like few scenes are kind of really cross-cut significantly, but I'm going to take them kind of in bigger chunks.
Okay.
We see Mbenga and Chapel are trapped in the airlock with soldiers banging on the door. They search the lockers, they find a beacon helmet and an attitude jet, and they decide they're going to jump into space and hope that the Enterprise finds them before they freeze to death. I guess that's their plan. The Enterprise will see them. I feel like they should really wait until the people actually break through the airlock door, because then you could at least like vent some of them to space.
True. But also, like they have this sense of urgency. I'm glad they had some sense of urgency, because also they don't know that Spock's about to fire and destroy them.
Right.
Although I guess they do. They do know that because they told
they
Spock
want him
to. Do
to
that. They want
but
him to.
But will
yeah.
he? Who knows?
Also, while I'm giving notes to the writers' room, it is 2023, and we have a much better idea what happens to people when they get thrown into the void of space.
Mm-hmm.
And I implore you to just stop getting it wrong. You're not going to fucking freeze in 60 seconds. You'll yeah. die of a lack of oxygen. And that is true. Like, you can't, like, humans can't survive long outside of, because there's no air to breathe. And it's not, you can't hold your breath. So it's like, how long can you maintain consciousness when all the atoms of oxygen are stripped out of your lungs from violent decompression? Not long, but you're not going to fucking freeze. And it bothers me that chief medical officer of a starship doesn't know that. It kind of borderline bothers me that these writers haven't seen the last season of The Expanse. The yeah. best science fiction show, like they all should be watching that. Taken, you've got fucking half the cast on your show now. Ask them.
Yeah.
This dude's wife was lovers with a woman who got blown out to space, knows all about it. Was super detailed, super realistic, and how that all went down. And no more of this freezing solid in a minute shit.
All right. I don't know. I want to see people shatter like T-1000. That's what I want to see. Go into space, they get hit by a micro asteroid, and boom, they just shatter.
The other thing is, like, because they were flying through these weird jello asteroids, red jello salad asteroids. Dominga could have said
the
there's
planet, I guess.
That there's radiation from these dilithium asteroids could, like, but they just established that the dilithium doesn't generate radiation. They need, you got to have something. Or just like, hey, we'll die. There's no air in space, Chapel. We'll die. Our brains will die in less than a minute. You know?
Oh, no shit. No shit. There's no air in space. Okay, let's cancel that plan. I didn't realize there was no air in space.
Yeah. I don't, even in The Next Generation, like, remember that one episode where, like, Beverly and Geordi were stuck in the shuttle bay that had a plasma fire and was going to roast them alive? And Bev's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to open up we're going to expose ourselves to the vacuum of space. And then for some reason, we have to stagger across the deck to shut the door after I can't remember why. But, like, they got it right 30 years ago, man. They didn't fucking, they weren't, like, freezing. They were just, they did hold their breath. I don't know about that. But anyway, we just know what happens when people go out in space now. And stop getting it wrong.
Shields up. Here come the ads.
Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa. Starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role, and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis, Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
At ease, ensigns. Welcome back to Baldly Go. So the Enterprise gives chase through the planetary rings while being fired at by... I'm calling it the Federation ship, because that's what they call it. I don't know, this Crossfield class ship. Anyway, Spock waits until the last possible moment to blow up the ship to see if Chaplin and Binga can make it off. Just as he fires, they jump out into space. Enterprise picks up their signal and beams them aboard. And they're both really cold, but they survive.
With tears in his eyes, this would really bother me if this was the old series era Spock. But like, I think, again, like I said in the preamble, I think they did a really good job of setting up a reasonably emotional Spock. And I wonder if that's going to be one of the things that leads to the frosting of the relationship between him and T'Pring. You know, the fact that he's becoming a little bit too human for her tastes.
That's possible.
Or also just a cheating with the Nurse Chapel, that could do it too. Because it seems clear that's going to happen.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a lot of feels there for sure.
Yeah.
Does this, let me ask you this, does giving Spock all these highly emotional relationships cheapen the one that he has with James Kirk later? Because I always felt that was unique in Spock's history, where he had bonded with someone so closely that he would show any emotion, even in those dire moments. And here he's doing it left and right.
Well, unless they're telling the story of this Spock who did that and then got burnt and then realized that he really wanted to lean into the Vulcan side and he wants to be free of these emotions, and he focuses up, and then, you know, for many, many years... and then him and Bones are the one that break him back out of that shell to where he can feel a little bit more comfortable with his humans. Or like to me, the old series Spock, or especially movie era Spock, post movie era Spock, is a fully integrated human Vulcan hybrid. He who has no shame in his game, who understands the strengths and weaknesses from both sides of his heritage, is comfortable in his skin. And like, I think this is part of the, so like, and personal journeys are not like just a steady upwards climb. It's usually climb, stumble, steps back. So like, I guess I'm fine with it. It just depends on how well they write it. And I think they are, as much as I am a little nervous about how horny the show is specifically about Spock and how much of season one, his development was all kind of like, you know, Vulcan's gone wild. I think that they are kind of like, it feels to me this first episode that they are kind of like rounding into a lot of like satisfying ways to do this emotional arc for him. That's not going to be just purely, oh, Vulcans fuck kind of. So yeah, it doesn't bother me, but apparently it bothers you. Okay. Do you want to talk about it? I'm here for you.
I mean, it was kind of a question that had been like stewing while I was watching this episode and remembering season one. I don't know, because you said, okay, maybe this is like him experiencing this and he's going to clam back up, but I feel like him clamming up, he doesn't have much time to reestablish the character of Spock as we know it, right? In the perspective, from the perspective of a Vulcan life.
True.
Like, what, 20 years? Maybe?
Right.
Because like, James T. Kirk, I don't know how old he's supposed to be in like the original series, but 40?
I think I always thought he was mid-30s, like prime, the physical prime of his life.
And how old is the James T. Kirk in this show? Like 23?
Yeah, late 20s. 25? I mean, he's a captain, so he's got to be. He cannot be 25. No fucking way.
So what does Spock have? Like 10 years to clam back up? That seems like a blink in a Vulcan lifetime.
But like, think, we know a lot of things happen in that. We know he loses, like, he doesn't lose his Vulcan wife, but by the time we meet that back again in a mock time, they are like, she's trying to get him killed.
You know?
Like, she's trying to like get rid, she's trying to Vulcan divorce him. Uh-huh. And he's going to lose his captain.
Like the Vulcan hello.
You know, to a horrifying disaster that, like, the other thing is, like, that Spock was trying to clamp down and be more Vulcan, and he undid a lot of that conditioning to fight the Gorn. So, like, to me, it's like, that's, you know, they're thinking a couple of steps ahead in terms of writing, which is, I don't think they've always done on the new Trek stuff.
Sure, sure.
So I'm a, because like every time I see Spock with tears in his eyes, it really fucks with me. And I kind of like feel my hackles, but I'm like, this is the youngest. So like, I think they're doing the right thing, but it remains to be seen if they can do it at a high enough level to fucking make us happy. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, when you lay it out like that, it sounds like they're doing pretty good, but I guess I need to see more of this show to know where they're going to take him. Because I don't know that they can do like a 5-year mission where he's this version of Spock and then have me believe that he's going to change two more times over the course of a few years.
But we do know that this series is going to end in like some pretty traumatic shit. And I could see like, wouldn't that be an interesting, like Spock does like really warm up to his human crew members, especially Pike, who's taking an interest in his development. And then that this guy gets horribly disfigured and scarred and maimed. As a way to like, and also like, I think Spock would be smart enough to know that, like, put two and two together and know that like Pike spared him this fate.
I do wonder if there's going to be some kind of discussion about that.
And there's a lot of weight being put on Spock's shoulders. Like, you know, even with the Admiral's talking about like, we're going to need like, there's almost like prophetic importance to Spock's journey that was put on him in the finale of last season. So like, I could see all that. You know, and it doesn't break him. It just makes him go into this glacial Vulcan mode at the beginning of the old series. I guess that works.
That would make sense. All right. The Klingons.
Can I say one other thing?
Yep.
Because I remember from, like, you know, reading all the old star logs and stuff, a lot of people were always trying to figure out ways to square Spock's stated unemotionability with, like, instances where it seems like he was a lot more emotional than you'd expect. And one of the things that, like, people pointed out was the episode of Star Trek where they recut the first pilot with Pike and Number One and Spock, you know, that they... And Pike comes in with the wheelchair and he's all scarred and he's communicating with a little button thing. When they flash back, there's a place where like Spock smiles and seems to like chuckle at something because they hadn't quite gotten his character noted. And that was always like just be kind of like, you know, Star Trek didn't care because it was just a silly 60s series. But the fans are like, you know, 20 years later, like, why was Spock? And they're like, well, he was younger. And I wonder if like, Strange New Worlds is trying to, because I noticed they do that in Picard and even Disco. It seems like something that the writers like to do is take some of these contradictions and try to noodle with them a bit. So it might be that they are intentionally trying to like smooth the squares from Spock in the pilot episode that was never released to Star Trek, the original pilot with Captain Pike, that he was more emotional and kind of like schoolboy. And make that like, oh, that's not just them not having Spock's character figure out. That was actually Spock, and how could that Spock be? And I actually think that's admirable. I like it when they do the, you know, you have a hard retcon and then a later show tries to like smooth it over. Sometimes they do it like to be funny. Like I'm thinking of like when in the Deep Space Nine episode when they went back into the Tribble episode of the old series.
Yeah.
And you see the Klingons and like Sisko and everybody looks at Worf and like, what the fuck is going on with these Klingons? He's like, we don't like to talk about it. It's just like, that's a funny way to deal with a hard retcon. But like, I also really like it when they do it kind of serious. And if they can pull it off, that would be awesome. If they can pull off this emotional arc for Spock and have him set up to where it gives us a new appreciation for Spock when we go watch the old series, that's the best thing they could possibly do.
Yeah,
and I'm rooting for them.
All right, the Klingons ask, what the hell is going on? You blew up a Federation ship. Why are you here? Spock tries to explain, but the Klingon captain refuses to believe him until he speaks face to face. So Spock offers to buy him a blood wine. Captain accepts. They all go to the planet and party together. You got Pelia and Spock talking about the Lanthanide people. Lon says goodbye to Oriana because she's going back to the Enterprise, I assume. She gives some look that's like, I should probably go back to the Enterprise. Spock drinks a bunch of blood wine.
I think 17 different characters said some variation of, you're not a typical Vulcan to Spock in the last 5 minutes of this episode. Laid on a little thick. We get it.
Yeah, we saw. He's not a typical Vulcan.
He's not quite with the shirt off going, woo, drinking blood wine, but he's certainly not the typical Vulcan.
Yeah.
There's so many mysteries. So I got this chief engineer, I guess now, Pelia, explaining that the first human she came out to was Spock's mom.
Yeah. Interesting.
Kind of like is because I when I first like, what the fuck is going on with this old lady that she's just going to be down with stealing a ship because she's bored? But I think there's more to it. I think there's almost like a burgeoning Guinan Picard relationship where there's, you know, like, and it'd be more of like before, and Spock's not aware of it, you know, but like there's got to be some history that went into her deciding to help them steal the ship.
Yeah, she talked with Mark Twain a few hundred years ago, and he said something about, yeah, there will come a time when you need
this
to steal
is
a
true because
you should steal a ship.
Yeah, I forgot that this is very Guinan. This like, oh, we have another quasi-immortal humanoid species that just hangs out at ancient Earth. This is very,
very Guinan.
How are the Lanthides different from the Ilorians? Are the Ilorians just, or Lanthides just the Lorians that landed on Earth and decided we're going to stay? We're going to stay with these Earth. We're going to wallow with these Earth pigs for a while.
Guess so, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's definitely like a mini puzzle box, this engineer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if it's going anywhere because she says she's, you know, former chief engineer. Like, she's not going to be on the ship. She's not our new... Please, she's not our new chief engineer.
No, she totally is. What
she
do you mean she's
be.
Not? She is.
She
it was
can't
in all
be.
It was in all the preseason information. She's going to be
the
new chief engineer.
I don't know
if
I can watch the rest of this season if she's the chief engineer.
Look, I got through season two of Pulaski. Anything's possible.
Fair.
Because she's like
whole
best. Because like Pulaski's openly antagonistic to my favorite character, Data. Like, at least this one likes Spock. You know,
but
she's
what if
like,
Pulaski sounded like Fran Drescher? I can't, man.
She pronounced Data's name Data. Like, is that bad enough? Like,
it's pretty
oh
bad.
Man, fucking Pulaski, Jesus. Yeah, no, I like Carol Kane quite a bit more than you do. So
apparently,
we'll see. We'll see how she does. It's a little bit of a downgrade from God. What was his name? The blind Andorian.
Hammer.
Yeah. I fucking loved him. He was amazing. Yeah. And I'm sad to see him go, but I'm curious to see what they do with the immortal shapeshifting or not the blending into human type secret aliens.
Well, if she's the new chief engineer, I hope they continue the pattern of killing chief engineers once a season.
Yeah. And I actually like the writing here where she, you know, like Spock's searching for reason why she helped and she's like, well, it's do you know what the worst thing about living nearly forever? And Spock's like, oh, losing the people you love. She's like, oh, God, no. It's boredom. I thought that was really it's the pain shared by all those who live with half open heart. Boredom. That was pretty funny. And
I mean,
your ship has
you
a shortage of it.
You get. Yeah, for sure. Eventually, you just get bored of losing the people you love. Right. It's like, God, another person I love is lost. I felt this before. I felt this so many times. What's new?
Yeah. That's probably unironically true. You know?
Yeah.
Like the first time you skin your knee, you cry like forever and ever and your mom's got to kiss it and put band-aids and boo-boo. And then it's just like a Tuesday. Same thing about getting your heart broke a time or two. So it's like, it seems like us humans are very, and I guess any kind of sentient life would be very easy to habituate to whatever you're feeling, any kind of emotional pain you're feeling.
Mm-hmm. All right, then Spock gets his ass chewed by the Admiral.
Sure.
He doesn't apologize for doing what he thought was right, but the Admiral doesn't punish him either, at least this
time. And I thought
time.
That, and again, it's like every single time I'm like, this is fucking stupid. The show had a reason. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, I cannot believe that he's not getting more of a slap on the wrist for stealing a starship and disobeying direct Starfleet orders. But turns out the Admirals have bigger fish to fry. Much bigger parasitical humanoid lizard fish to fry.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It's the last scene. It's the big, like, shocking reveal at the end of the episode. But yeah, they reveal what's been bothering them because earlier Pike was like, yeah, and those Admirals seem tense.
Yeah.
What's been bothering them is there is apparently some object headed toward Klingon space. I'm not sure. It's a Gorn. It's identified as Gorn in Origins.
Attack ship or something.
Could be a Gorn attack ship. Could be. I mean, if the Gorn are like aliens, it could be just a bunch of Gorn eggs type of thing.
True.
Who knows? They could be, you know, trying to Borg it up, right?
Well, this reminded me so much of the plot thread of the parasitic aliens taking over Starfleet Command in season one of Star Trek The Next Generation.
For sure.
Like, you know, they show that, like, oh, you know, before we destroyed the mother, there is a signal beaming out into the unknown space. And it was like the implication is a homing signal. We're going to have an invasion fleet. They eventually morph that into the Borg and drop the. But like, I always thought that was a chilling way to like kind of to start a potential dark, deep threat arc. So like if they can do that with the Gorn, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to hide the fact that you've been Gornified, you know, with the chest bursting and all that stuff.
But just more of like the horror of something that's coming that's potentially unstoppable.
It's dangerous. Because we saw how hard they are to take out.
Yes.
So you get a few hundred of those running around on your planet, and what do you do?
Man, the death toll could be in the tens of thousands. On a whole planet, Jim? My God.
Right? Across
unimaginable number
empire.
Of people died. Maybe 100,000, mm-hmm. if I really stretch my imagination.
Yeah, no, it's exciting, though. And I'm not sure that we're totally done with, like, the Klingon Federation War yet, either.
Yeah.
There might be more to come with other factions trying this, or, you know, just because this faction got their starship blown up doesn't mean they're not going to try again. So
it does. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing tensions between the Klingons and Romulans. That's pretty old school. Thiolians, get the Thiolians involved.
Who?
The crystalline species that web everybody up with their trap mines. Web mines.
I like it. There's this one scene that we skipped, which is Spock feeling the feels while looking at Chapel recovering in sick bay, and he can't really express them in words, so he goes back to his quarters and plays his lute.
What is the nature of Chapel and Spock's relationship? Because it seemed to me in season one that it was a purely sexual attraction.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's clearly much more emotional here.
Do I misremember something that happened in the later stages of season one where it got a lot more like emotional? Because like he is, or maybe Spock's just inexperienced. He's only had sex with the one woman, and you know he didn't know that he could feel that way about another, and it's like got him all confused. But like it feels like this depth of emotion, or maybe it's just overflowing because he's broken down all these emotional walls, and it's like not even about Chapel. I don't know.
Yeah, and he's been under extreme stress. Yeah, it's possible, but I mean, definitely, like, the picture they're painting here is he feels deeply emotional about Chapel.
Yeah, he's deeply affected by her distress.
Mm-hmm.
He has no words for how he feels.
No.
He's such an un-Vulcan Vulcan.
Well, the Vulcans probably don't have a lot of words for emotion, right? To express emotion.
They're like the opposite of the Inuit with snow. Like they get supposed to have like 47 words for snow. They've got like one word for feelings. It's just feelings. I'm feeling things. I don't like it.
Absolutely.
I got to go play my lute and focus on math. I got to focus on my chord progressions.
Yeah. Good stuff. But that's kind of the end of the episode. And at the very end, we get a dedication to Nichelle Nichols. They say for Nichelle, who was first through the door, showed us the stars, hailing frequencies forever open. And sweet.
Yeah, I thought that was nice. She died in the off season last July at the ripe old age of 89. Mm-hmm. Hugely influential, ambassador to NASA for over 25 years, instrumental in getting several minority candidates through the I was reading her Wikipedia page. You know, everyone's heard the story, I'm sure. But if you haven't, the idea that she was at She heard that a fan wanted to meet her, and she's like, you know, looking for a tr- and then it was Martin Luther King Jr. They talked about, you know, that him and his wife, the only show they let their kids watch, stay up late for, is Star Trek. And she was talking about stopping in favor of a Broadway career. And he's like, you can't do it. Like, you've got to be like, you are the shining example that, like, you know, that this is the future, that, you know, black folk can be scientists and lawyers and spacemen and women. And we need that. And it was so, and that she, it kind of seemed like a life-changing event for her. It's kind of, you know, like every human story ends in somewhat tragedy. She had some health problems, some dementia at the end, but what a long and impactful career, both on and off the stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Damn, we don't have very many of the old crew left. Like Bill Shatner, clinging like a Klingon to life.
In
is that it? That and
point.
Walter Koenig?
I think yeah, Koenig's still alive.
Takai?
I think that's it. Oh yeah. Yeah, George Takai's still out there. What
we got
we
two helmsmen
got
and a
everybody.
Captain, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know. Shatner might outlive me at this point. He seems to still be going just fine.
Dude, and 90s. Like if you've seen a recent picture of him, it doesn't look like he's stopped aging around Star Trek VI.
It's kind of crazy, yeah.
It really is. He's 90 years old and he looks like he's 65. Mm-hmm. It's them's the breaks. Star Trek at baldmove.com is how our hailing frequencies are kept open. You can also follow along with everything that we're doing here at twitter.com/baldmoves, where we post our schedule and all of our releases, or go to baldmove.com. If you like our science fiction fantasy stuff, you might want to subscribe to Bald Move Pulp, because boy, there's a bunch of stuff coming down the line. I think you guys will really like Foundation. It's an Apple TV Plus series. We're also doing this summer, what all are we doing this summer? Doing Justified City Primeval, The Bear, season two, Star Trek. I think there's the Strange New Worlds. There's one other thing I know I'm forgetting.
It's Foundation.
Is it those Foundation?
Those are the four. Yeah.
Tons of movies and stuff. And, if you'd like to support what we're doing here at Bald Move, go to support.baldmove.com, where you can get access to our club, which gives you free access to ad-free feeds, as well as more great audio bonus content. We're talking about Silo, another great science fiction show, on our premium off-the-clock episodes. Check it out at support.baldmove.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week for another exciting episode of Strange New Worlds. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
I want the podcast to stop. Now.